Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the October 22nd edition of Commodity Week. The markets have been volatile this week. Wait, let me say it in a different way. The markets were choppy this week. Whoa, that brings back some bad memories, doesn't it? Today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Chris Hurt, Purdue University Extension Ag Economist. Our panelists in studio today include Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Mike Georgie of Allendale from Mahomet, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's open today's discussion with this question. When, how, and should a farmer in the Midwest consider selling next year's crop? We'll start with you, Mike Zuzulo.
Well, Todd, in 2010, it was sell and defend. In 2011, for me, it's still selling and still defending. I don't have a problem with producers letting go of upwards of 35% of 2011 crop, but I would be very, very quick to re-own on either a slight break, where we'd fill the gap from the report from October, or if we would break above the resistance levels. I think right now we're in a trading range market waiting for the November report. Why re-own? Well, I think the supplies are still tight. That hasn't changed. The global supplies haven't changed at all since October's report. The world wheat price is still U.S. wheat price is still very competitive in the world with $260 a ton soft red wheat at the end of this week at the Gulf. The acres are not bought or set yet, and I think finally more money's coming into the financial system courtesy of the Federal Reserve. I mean, I read a statistic this past week that 41 cents of every dollar this year is going to need to be borrowed by the federal government to meet our budget. So I think we'll keep stimulating the heck out of this market for the next couple. 3 months.
Pete Manhart, when, how, and if they do, why should they sell next year's corn crop?
If you've got expenses locked in, there's nothing wrong with taking a profit. I've got a few people that have sold up to 50% at their local elevator for next year. Most people haven't done that much, but I don't see any problem with selling these high prices up to a quarter of the crop if you have especially expenses.
And Mike Georgie?
Well, I think you need to start selling. You need to sell to cover expenses, and what I'm recommending is doing a three-way option trade in both corn and beans where you can still take advantage of the top side and still have a bottom side profit locked in.
Well, let's go back to something I mentioned up front at the top of this program. I use the word choppy instead of volatile. It brings back some different memories than volatile. Volatile just sort of tells us the market's moving up and down fairly quickly. Choppy tells us, Mike, that we're base building of some sort. Is that what you would call this marketplace?
Yeah, and I think the supply bowl has run his course for now. I think the supply bowl is getting old. Ever since the June 30th report, we've had the supply bowl running the show, and we're looking for the demand bowl now. And the feed grains, we haven't found it. Soybeans, you can't hide from it.
Yeah, the corn, we're just in a range back and forth until some new news comes in to either push it further up because of USDA's new numbers possibly. But the sales overseas haven't helped maintain anything lately.
Hey, speaking of USDA, anybody going to the USDA's?
You daddy? Bet. You betcha. We'll be there with our hockey masks on.
No, I didn't finish that off, but that's Monday and Tuesday of next week, right?
Yeah, the data users is Monday, and then the outlook goes on Tuesday.
So what do you expect to talk to them about?
They've already talked in the Wall Street Journal about how the crop conditions can be better, but the yields be lower. The big thing I want to find out is what did that WASDE report mean as far as the grain stocks? Do we have 10, new crop 10 corn into the old crop carryover and into the grain stocks or not? Because I still can't read in between the lines on that one.
Well, I guess we'll find out, and maybe we'll give you a call. We'll talk to you next Friday, I know, about it. So that's one of the things we'll be discussing next week. I know at least a couple of folks are headed up to that data users meeting. It's in Chicago. We'll try to keep everybody up to speed on that. Let's go back to the corn market just a bit. Corn futures this week finished the December contract at 579 and a half top. The bottom there at $5.42 3/4 settlement price. In the December corn pit was at $5.60. It was down three for the week. December 11, that's next year's, at 5.18 and a half, was a penny and 3/4 higher. You said you'd be ready to make some move. Actually, you all said you'd be ready to go ahead and sell this crop. Can you want to go back in and explain just a little bit more about how you're going to defend that sale?
Well, I think you have to defend it because you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, you can say we're going to buy acres, but then there's also the outside markets where what's the dollar going to do? Is inflation going to take over? Is China going to quit buying beans and go to South America? I mean, you're locking in a profit. You can make cash sales a heck of a lot better than you made last year. And if you start your sales now and these are your worst, I don't see how you're not a profitable farmer.
Pete, when a producer calls up and says, I want to make that sale, what are the first questions you ask him about in terms of what he's already got in place? So do you ask him what, for seeds, input? What
have you got of your inputs? Some people haven't got prices yet on some inputs because the fall went so quick, some places can't get what they need. So that's a problem of what's the input cost. But when you get next year's corn crop that you can sell out of the field right now for close to $5 and beans close to $11, I think they need to be selling some of it no matter what. I wouldn't sell a whole huge part unless you've got those other things all locked in.
And then, Mike, you said you wanted to defend.
Yeah.
You want to buy it back. Where are we going to do that at?
I'd say what kind
of strategy?
Yeah, 25 cents lower or in the corn, 50 cents lower in the beans, or 25 cents higher if we'd break out of that recent high in corn and if we'd be able to take out this past week's highs in beans. To me, I mean, corn is a perfect example this week. JCI China has been pushing the idea that China bought corn this week. Nobody could confirm it. They're at a corn crop of 153 over in China. USDA's at 166, I think, and China's
right.
Government's at 169. That'd be a huge, huge difference if it came out next week that JCI China's right. So that's where it goes back to. When I talk to producers, I say to them, I'm in the camp where I'm a pretty conservative. I don't want to say tightwad, but that's about as close as I can come to it. But when it comes right down to it, if you can sell almost $5 cash corn and lock in, you know, 120, 130, and in my case, I said 35%, even if it was just 40 or 50, 60 bushels of the acre, and you can lock in that kind of guaranteed revenue, and then you can come back in for $15 an acre and defend that and have your cake and eat it too. Why wouldn't you do that? And the producers tend to think, well, I'm already at the top of the range. Why would I want to buy that stuff back? And my basic answer is because I think the demand bullishness and the supply bullishness in terms of the uncertainty is here in the front end. So by the time we get to March, April, most of the bullishness should be already factored in, and then you're just out for summer weather to make the play.
So on the flip side of this, most producers have probably listened to our programs. They've heard some of the chart areas. They've listened to us talk about the gaps that haven't been filled at this point. They listened to island bottoms and $6 corn and higher, and they've heard beans that were much higher, and they're probably feeling pretty comfortable about just sitting at this point and waiting on both old crop and new crop sales. Do you have trouble convincing them that this is the right thing to do?
No. I mean, I think as far as this O-10 crop, that's exactly what you're thinking. And it's hard to convince them to sell out or to make sales because that's what everybody's saying.
So with the 10 crop, you're having a problem, but with 11, they're willing to do it.
They're willing to start, yes.
they're willing to start on 11. 10, they've sold pretty much everything that they're going to sell right now. They're done. They're waiting to see what's going to happen. I've got some people that sold out everything and went and bought calls. I've got others that haven't sold one bushel yet, and I'm trying to push to sell a bunch of it. And if you want to stay in, go buy a call.
Still got 30% of the 10 crop in the bin. Got some re-ownership on the books for both corn and beans. Haven't sold more than 10 or 15% in 11 yet in terms of the official recommendations. I'm just asking producers if they really want to push the envelope on 11 to really be there to re-own it.
Wheat futures, December contract, a $7.09 top, bottom at 665, settled 670 and three quarters, down 33 and three quarters, July 736, down 29 and one quarter cents. Mike, I'm just going to look at you. Go.
I just keep thinking that because the wheat-corn spread keeps weakening and the wheat keeps losing to the corn, and Southern Plains cattle feeders are now telling me that wheat works into their feed rations, I don't know how we can get a six in front of corn without wheat supporting it, if not leading it.
Anything from the other two on wheat?
We've got lots more planted here for next year. I think the rest of the world is planning on having, you know, more also. So I think it can help the corn, as Mike said, or it can hurt it.
Okay. Let's take a look at the soybeans. November contract this week, high of $12.23.5, a low at $11.65.5, settlement price for the nearby contract at $11.99.5, lead option up 14.5 cents. That's the November this year. November of next year at $11.53.5, up 16.25 cents. You know, we haven't talked much about a potential war for acres, but I suppose that's got to be in the offing or is in the midst of it at this point.
That's exactly right. I mean, they're expecting a war on acres for next year, whether it's going to be cotton, soybeans, corn, wheat, you know, and that's what everybody's looking for, and that's why everybody say, well, it's got to go higher. It's got to go higher, and that's the only thing they're focusing on in some respects.
That's probably not a good thing if you're focusing on just one.
No, not really.
Bean prices at almost $11 for next year, whatever you're planting, I'd lock a bunch of them in.
I think I'm going to take the same route as I did in 10, Todd, and work harder on 2011 bean hedges and hang back on corn, because right now bean acres are being bought. Corn acres are not, based upon that new crop spread between the no beans and Dease corn. So this past year I really worked harder on bean hedges. And I thought if I'm wrong, then it's really going to be made up in the corn. That seemed to work. I think that same type of strategy can work again in 11.
You say bean acres are being bought. That's in Chicago, but is it actually happening in the field?
I do think so, yeah.
Yeah, $11 cash beans, it's going to make me plant more beans.
I think that's right, because people are looking at corn on corn as not being very good this year, and you can lock in $11 beans and lock in a pretty good profit.
What do we make of China? And their interest rate, that was what started things this week. We probably ought to bring that up. Their interest rate move. Did the marketplace just misjudge that to begin with? It dropped like a rock. She turned around and went back up the next day. And does anybody have an understanding of what really happened in the marketplace over that two-day period?
Well, everything was affected by it, not just grains, but gold, silver, the Dow. They all just freaked. And I don't think they should have on 0.25%. Their rate's now 5.5%. Their banks are paying 3.5% interest. They were trying to help get people to still put money into banks. And with their rate of growth the way it is, I don't think that 0.25%. I think it was an overreaction by all of our people here.
You know, even the Federal Reserve Bank president of Dallas said in a speech this week, Todd, he said, "We realize that the more we push money into our system, the more it goes into emerging markets." And I think China and the United States are just up against a wall right now. The more we ease, the more China sees money come over there, and the more they have to push back because of inflation. So, when, like Pete said, when you see something like what China did, it's almost like what we're seeing in our price action this past week. Maybe this lower price and maybe what China's doing is actually securing and keeping our long-term demand intact, and it's the best thing for everybody.
I think that's right. I mean, China has said they don't like the low dollar. They're going to do something. Everything was overbought, and they come out with this 0.25%. And like Pete said, everybody freaked. And then overnight they said, oh, it was 0.25%. What are we thinking? And it went right back the other way.
In the cattle pits from the CME Group, the nearby contract and the live cattle this week for the October, a high of 102.35, a low at 98.35. The settlement price there at 102.20 was up $4.05. The October feeder cattle at 111.20 were up $2.45. Lean hogs on the week, the December contract at $70.90 for the high, the low at 67.60. The settlement price there at $70.65. finished $1.75 higher. When we return in just a couple of minutes, we'll talk with Chris Hurt. He's a Purdue Extension Ag Economist. Just a quick reminder, we are in the middle of Fund Drive, and we do depend on you, the listener, for about 40% of our operating costs. So please do dial this number, 217-244-9455, with your pledge of financial support. Or if you're listening to our program online as a podcast, you can visit the top of the page at willag.org. and hit pledge. It's important. We're on our way to a goal of $175,000 by the end of, I believe, Monday of next week. We're hopeful that the agricultural audience will step up and pledge their financial support to willag.org and Commodity Week.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. The October temperature roller coaster continued in Illinois this week. Although three cold fronts moved through the state, temperatures were near to slightly above normal. Average daily temperatures ranged from near normal in northern Illinois to about 2 degrees above normal in southern Illinois. High temperatures averaged 4 degrees above normal in the north to 9 degrees above normal in the south, but those were offset by morning low temperatures that were 1 to 2 degrees below normal. The coldest morning of the week was on Tuesday, when low temperatures were generally in the 30s north of I-70 and scattered frost was reported. Temperatures dipped to as low as 28 in some locations in northwestern Illinois. Rainfall was almost non-existent this week, again, aside from some very light showers that moved south through Illinois on Monday. Rainfall was only a few hundredths of an inch and confined mostly to east-central Illinois. A pattern change appears to be in the offing starting this weekend, and that should mean better chances for rain during the coming week. A series of upper-level troughs will move across the central U.S. this next week. In addition to this weekend, there will be another chance for rain about Tuesday. An even better chance for rain will come on Thursday when a fairly strong cold front is expected to move through Illinois. That will bring much cooler weather for the end of the week and at least for the start of next weekend. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the October 22nd edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio include Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Mike Georgie of Allendale from Mahomet, Illinois, and Mike Zuzlow of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana. On the phone line with us today from West Lafayette and Purdue University is Extension Ag Economist Chris Hurt. Thank you so much for taking the time with us today, Mr. Hurt.
Well, my pleasure.
You took a look at livestock this week. You do every week. And we have not gone through the cattle on feed numbers that were released Friday afternoon. So let's do that now. 103 for the on feed as October 1. That's 103%. Placements during August at 103%. And marketings during August were at 104. All those numbers were just above the average guess or above by a couple of points in the case of the marketings. What did you make of them Friday afternoon?
Well, I think we saw a few more cattle being placed than what we would have guessed. Again, these were September placements, and we know it was really the October USDA reports that got this market at the grain markets, I should say, at the top end of where we're at right now. So I think what we see, at least in this cattle on feed report, is placements were still relatively higher than we thought we were going to see. And certainly that says we haven't we didn't in September anyway have corn prices high enough, and obviously they're higher in October. I think it also says that that feed demand is a little bit stronger, and I think that probably is overall supportive to corn and soybean meal prices as well.
And when you look at it, you said supportive to the corn. Do you have a place at which you think the livestock producer, in particular the beef producer, will stop and become scared of the marketplace?
Well, of course, we're going to have to look at the October placements when we get those in another month. That's where we're really going to see the impact of the last surge up in terms of the corn price. But, you know, we're also getting strengthening now in the finished cattle prices, the cattle futures price. And so this is helping to at least maintain calf prices. And I think the sense I have right now is that we're not going to see just a rapid movement away from feeding cattle. We've got $105, $106 out there in terms of some of the spring futures on the live cattle. And I think what that's saying is perhaps corn prices haven't been high enough yet to truly get these cattle out of the feedlots. And overall, that's my evaluation on the hogs as well, that it's going to take prices above $5.50 corn to really get the hog industry to cut back.
Well, if that's the case with the livestock and we haven't seen rationing there, who might ration and at what point?
Well, I think that's the major question. We know with the RFS in place on ethanol that there won't be much rationing there unless the livestock industry appeals to EPA for exercise of the emergency clause, where EPA does have the ability to cut back the RFS for 2012. The export side, I think, you know, we can't really say there that we have rationed at all. And from what I see, I can't see yet that we have really started much rationing process in the livestock sector. Where we normally do the rationing is livestock. So I think, as your panelists have pointed out, you can't see a rapid fall in prices of corn and beans from this level, because we do have to do probably some rationing, further rationing, and we can't see evidence of that yet in the buyers of these crops.
Is the supply of cattle and hogs small enough that we may not have to see that down the road here, that corn can go a lot higher and the prices of the cattle livestock is going to stay?
Well, overall, I think we are actually going to see very strong prices, cattle, hogs, some better prices on milk for this next year. And that's largely based on what has already been done in those industries to cut the supply. So as we go into 2011, we are really going to see small supplies of beef, fairly small supplies of pork, and the demand side is so much better in terms of exports, as well as just demand in the United States has improved with a recovering economy, not a robust economy, but a recovering economy. So I think, again, this is one of the aspects of this corn market that we have to think about, and that is if we do have to ration more, it's always easier to do that early in the marketing year, like in the fall. The longer we go into the winter or spring and don't get the rationing done, then the harder we have to drive prices upward. Now, again, we'll have a lot more information as we go through this fall in terms of what's happening on the livestock sector, and obviously get weekly or even daily numbers on the export purchases. So we're going to have a lot of data to follow, and hopefully USDA's information will become a little more clarity over the next several months.
Do you think that cattle feeders are better covered on what they need for feed purposes than they have been in the past, so that the price going up doesn't hurt as much?
Well, my guess is that they are really not covered. I think really there was a good bit of surprise in terms of certainly the October report. Now, again, I think the anticipation that the corn crop may not be up to those 165 levels that we saw early from USDA, that may have been fairly common. On the other hand, going down to the 155.8 was really quite a surprise, and the corn market told us that. So I think the coverage is not very large. And so I think there's a lot of risk and a lot of potential losses from that higher corn price that will be faced by the cattle finishers.
Chris, I'd heard for the first time this week that the wheat works into feed rations in the southern plains. I was wondering if you were hearing any of that yet, because you have a lot better feelers than me. And also, is Asia probably looking to wheat with the wheat-corn spread at this point or not?
I haven't heard on the wheat, and so probably your information is good there. Generally, we're looking at about the feeding value of wheat's roughly 10% higher than corn. So when you've got $5.50 corn, your $6 wheat starts to come into the mix, especially southern plains where they have generally very large production of wheat. So I think that probably is a distinct possibility, and obviously wheat acreage, wheat will be the first crop in the world to really resupply world shortages as we look at southern hemisphere wheat possibly, and then, of course, our wheat that could come on into May and certainly June of next year. So wheat probably will be the crop that would be on the downside or show that shortage of supply in the world really is alleviated first.
What kind of advice, Chris, have you been giving producers in Indiana that have had very short crops in some area for corn and soybean?
Yeah, probably our Evansville area is probably where we've saw the most dryness this summer, and actually they had dry weather even in May and June. So there we've seen yields off as much as 30 bushels to the acre. And I think most of them did not forward price very much because of their concern about smaller yields. And at this point, I think like your panel that did a great job of evaluating, these are awfully good returns. And if people don't have very much price, then you really do get more encouraging towards pricing, certainly this 2010 crop.
And any final word from you and advice for producers as we wrap up this edition of Commodity Week?
Well, I have been really impressed, as your panel talked about the outside markets that we all are watching very closely. And I think those are some real keys, particularly the dollar as well as the gold market. And again, I think particularly what's reflected in the dollar, it's not that it's the exchange rate is actually going to cause our exports to be better or worse. It is that so much of the big macro events that are going on in financial markets are reflected in that dollar. So I just point out, I think the dollar is a good place to be looking. Remember, we'll see a top in the corn-soybean market at some point, and so I like to look at those outside markets as maybe a clue.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Thank you.
Chris Hurt is a Purdue Extension Ag Economist from Lafayette, Indiana. Now a final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Mike Georgi.
Yeah, this is a volatile market. Using options can lessen your risk a lot, so I'd definitely look into them.
Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities.
Having a plan to do work on the rest of your 10 crop and then to start working on your 11 if you haven't is a good thing to have in place.
And Mike Zuzalo of Global Commodity Analytics.
Let's be looking for a seasonal low in the wheat next week if that cold, dry weather comes through as advertised.
You've been listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Public means you, and that means we'd like to have you give us a call right now at 217-244-9455 and pledge your financial support to IPM, willag.org, and all of the agricultural programming that we produce for you, whether it's on the radio station or online. $120 is a great place to start. You can do that by calling this number, 217-244-9455, or online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Thank you so much in advance. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great week.